Don't make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Searstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, May 4th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, what a day that we've had in gold and silver. It's always good to see an up day in the metals. And today we're looking at gold in the aftermarket, the New York spot prices. We're seeing gold up $10.40. It's trying to go higher, but that just seems to stay pretty much at 10. We had a high of 11.93, and we're currently at 11.89. Silver today is up 29 cents at 16.49. Platinum is up 17. At 1151, palladium is up 7 at 784. The USDX today is trading higher, 0.22 at 94.43. Crude oil is down 0.22 at 58.93. And the paper markets today, they were higher for most of the day, but certainly off the their peaks of the day, their high peaks. We have the Dow at up 46 points at 18,070. The NASDAQ is up 11 at 5,016. The S&P is up 6 at 2114. The yen, not the yen, but the euro is 111. 10-year yield, that's moving right on up, 2.14%. And foreign markets, Germany was up almost 1.5%. Asian markets pretty much flat in trade overnight. Thank you, Al.
Thank me for what, Melody?
I don't control the markets.
I just observe them.
I'm just trying to get you to go. Hey, you had some action close to where you live.
Well, yeah, we had a little bit. We had the This is so bizarre. Here's the headline. You've all probably seen this, but two killed in gunfight outside Muhammad cartoon contest. All right, when you just stop to consider the headline all by itself, this is in the Washington Times. Two killed in gunfight outside Muhammad cartoon contest. This sounds like some sort of a joke. All right, it's something that starts out with a Jew, a Catholic, and a Muslim walk into a bar. All right, that's what this reads like. Two killed in a gunfight outside a Muhammad cartoon contest. I mean, it's just insane. Police in the Dallas suburb of Garland, and that's where I happen to live, incidentally, killed two men in a car during a gun battle as they attacked Muhammad cartoon drawing contest. As the event, they had a contest. The prize is $10,000 for whoever drew the best cartoon concerning Muhammad. And apparently some Muslims took offense and they decided to shoot the place up. As the event at the Curtis Colwell Center in Garland was ending, two males drove up to the front of the building in a car. Both males were armed and began shooting at a Garland into Independent School District security office. Garland police engaged the gunmen, who were both shot and killed. One guard who worked for the Garland ISD, the Independent School District, was wounded in the melee, which was held under tight security. He was apparently shot in the knee. More than 40 extra officers were assigned to the event at the expense of the New York-based American Freedom Defense Initiative. See, this is interesting. Why didn't the New York-based American Freedom Defense Initiative, why didn't they hold this event in New York? But in any case, they held it down here in Texas, and maybe they were looking for this kind of result. I'm not sure. Which was, again, $10,000 prize for the best cartoon depicting Muhammad. Somebody complained Ms. Giller and Mr. Wilders have been the target. They were featured at a Sharia activist, Pamela Giller, and Dutch ally Geert Wilders. They were present at this contest, and they may have been the intended targets. They've been on death list issued by the Muslims, and it just goes on, and it gets just bizarre. Will we have the event next year? There's the big question. All right, and who is going to go to the event? How many people will go to the event to sit inside to watch the cartoons, and how many will sit outside waiting to see if anybody drives up in a car and that looks suspicious, and perhaps they'll be inclined to shoot them? I don't know what to say. It's just nuts. Two killed in gunfight outside Muhammad cartoon contest. Again, it sounds like something out of Saturday Night Live. Do you have any Muhammad cartoon contests out where you live, Melody?
Not that I know of.
Would you like one?
No. Huh? I mean, who would even think of having this sort of contest? And I mean, really? But, yeah, one thing you did mention, that it's almost like it was set up. You know, let's go to a part of the country, and, you know, it's just crazy. Just absolutely crazy.
It really is, and I don't know what these guys were talking about. They had two people come up to shoot, all right, the contest. So what do? They start shooting at armed guards. And apparently they don't even shoot very well, because one guy they hit in the knee and they didn't even get the rest of them. I mean, this was, I don't know who these two Muslims, presumably Muslims, were that came to shoot up this contest. But they weren't good shots, for one.
Who were the ones that were actually killed? Were they the ones that were actually killed?
Yeah, there was the gunman that came up. He starts shooting at Texas police. I mean, you've got to take your life in your hands. You even look at them funny, but you start shooting at them, you can expect they will return fire. All right? This is, Texas is not a liberal-minded state, and the police are certainly not liberal-minded. And, you know, if you're going to bomb something, you're going to shoot something, you ought to at least get in next to it. Start shooting at the guards outside the building. I don't know. It was just stupid, you know, tragically stupid, but stupid. So, learning exercise, a learning experience for some people, but for others, maybe not. What's next, Melody?
I don't know, just wild and crazy. Carly Fiorina, she's the former Hewlett-Packard CEO. She's running for president. She made some interesting statements on America, Good Morning America, ABC's, and defending why she's, I don't know, defending, but describing why she's the best person to be president.
If she says, because I understand how the economy actually works.
Yeah, if she did, she'd still be working for Hewlett-Packard, but go ahead.
Well, it's an interesting claim. It's what she's implying there is she thinks that politicians talk about the economy as if it works one way, and she says, I know from my experience in the business world how the economy really works, and therefore I should be elected president. All by itself, it's kind of interesting. She's saying, ah, the rest of these idiots, they don't even know how the economy works. And she's at least implicitly referring to Hillary Clinton. She goes on and says, I understand the world, who's in it, how the world works. She's claiming that her understanding of who's in the world, who's significant, how the world works, her understanding is more accurate and in-depth than that of someone like Hillary Clinton, who's been a Secretary of State and United States Senator. She's saying, no, she doesn't really get it. I do. I understand bureaucracies, and that's what our federal government has become, a giant, bloated, unaccountable, corrupt bureaucracy. There, I agree with her. All right? A giant, bloated, unaccountable, corrupt bureaucracy. I agree with that. That's what it's become to a significant extent. It's also a bureaucracy that's regularly engaged in treason, and will, you know, this with the treaties and some of the other laws they pass, we have a government that is betraying us on a daily basis. And I would hope that somebody, I don't believe Hillary Clinton's going to do anything to stop that betrayal. I mean, there's just no reason to look at Hillary and say, oh, she's going to fight for the common people in this country any more than Barack Obama's fighting for the blacks. He's letting all the Mexicans come in. He's encouraging illegal aliens to come into this country who take jobs away from the blacks. He's not doing them any good. He's not doing this country any good. I don't believe Hillary will be any different. She may give things a somewhat different spin, but in the end, the agenda that's being implemented by our own government is to try to diminish and take this country down. They're not trying to help us. They're not trying to strengthen us. They're trying to weaken us. And someone needs to do something to stop that. And one of the first things you can do is get on the phone and tell them, call your congressman. Tell the lying SOB, and I don't care if it's yours. I don't care if your congressman is your father, your mother, your son, or your daughter, brother or sister. If he's been elected more than once to Congress, he is a lying SOB. He's not working for the benefit of this country. And there might be exceptions to what I just said, but there won't be many of them. 90% of them are working against our best interests, and nobody seems to care. She says, Carly Fiorina, she says, I understand technology, which is a tool both to reimagine government and reengage citizens in the process of government. I agree that it would be a good thing to reengage citizens in the process of government. I am wary of her plan to reimagine government. I reimagine that government, the constitutional government, would be restored in this country. That's what I imagine. And I don't expect to see it, but that's what I imagine. What does she reimagine for government? I mean, we have a constitution, which is the people's law. There's God's law, number one, the people's law, number two. People's law, the constitution of your state and the federal government. It starts out, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union. The Constitution was not drafted by the government. It was drafted by the people. It was validated by the people. And it's up to the people to change the Constitution. That's why Article 5 provides a process for amending the Constitution. It's not a living document, which is what a bunch of judiciary courts have said. Oh, it's a living document. No, it's not. It means today the same thing it meant when it was ratified back in 1788, unless it has subsequently been amended by we the people. And the only people who can say what the Constitution means are we the people. That's what it should be. But the judiciary has claimed that role for itself without warrant to do so, but they've gotten away with it for close to two centuries. And it was a big mistake on the part of us to let them do it. Anytime a constitutional issue comes up, who should decide what it means? At the trial court level, constitutional issues should be decided by the authors of the Constitution. And I don't mean Thomas Jefferson and James Madison and so on. I'm talking about we the people. It should be up to the jury. And if someone wants to take it up on appeal, then the courts can listen to it. But at the trial court level, the people should decide, is this what the Constitution means, or does it mean something else? And we've been allowing the courts to make these decisions for us, and they've betrayed us. They've made decisions that are best for the government and not best for the American people, which is a complete inversion of what this country was supposed to be. The government was supposed to be our public servant, not our master. But we have abandoned, we have not simply allowed government to usurp the role of master. We have lost our memory of our own capacity, our legal capacity to be the masters in this country, and we've turned it over to a professional class of politicians. Hillary, Ms. Fiorina, mounted an unsuccessful bid for U.S. Senate in 2010. Out of California, she acknowledged that past presidents have more experience in politics than she does. She said the nation was intended to be citizen government, and that's what I'm talking about, and that people across the country don't believe there's a need for a professional political class. I agree 100%. This is a pivotal point for our nation, so I think it's totally reasonable to look outside the political class that's been in Washington for a really long time. She's not just talking about a political class. She's also talking about the Republican Party and Democrat Party that are so well established that both of them seem to be bent on the same thing, which is promoting the New World Order. Mrs. Fiorina has been one of the leading critics of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She complains about Hillary using the private email system and foreign donations to the Clinton Foundation, and that Benghazi thing is still going on. I mean, there are photographs of the men who were not just died there. Four men died, Americans died in Benghazi, who had been repeatedly requesting aid and assistance from the government, and the government didn't back them up. And Hillary later said, what difference does it make? That was her response. She didn't think it was significant. There are pictures that are available of those men, at least one of them, being tortured. All right? Not a little, a lot. They didn't die easy. They died hard. And they didn't even need to die, except Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton opted to do nothing to save them. I think that's going to turn up before this next election cycle is finished. And when it does, if it turns up big time, I think it may be enough to run Hillary out of the race.
If these Republicans have any,
yeah, I know what you
cojones.
Can say, but you can't.
If any of them has the ability or the desire, or
but will they?
I don't know.
Who's going to bring this up? All right, that's a big question. Will the Republicans bring this issue up? I mean, they might. I'm not saying they won't. But I'm not going to be surprised if even the Republicans say, go easy, let's not talk about this. And it's completely wrong.
But look what happened to the emails. She takes a visit to the White House before she makes her announcement that she's running for president. She visits the White House prior to her announcement, and all of a sudden all the information about the emails has pretty much been eliminated.
Yep.
So they might address it, but certainly not to the degree that they...
No, Douglas, she's going to just bluff her way through it. And that's one of the things I don't like about this woman. She is just shameless. Her pursuit of power is so enormous that she doesn't care what happens. She doesn't care what she gets caught doing. She is going to continue to run for the presidency unless something really extraordinary and clearly public opinion turns her back on Hillary.
Well, they've been
she
able
doesn't
to get
care
away.
What you catch her doing. It doesn't matter. You know, when
they
Bill
get
Clinton
away with
no,
everything.
Well, I understand that, but so does everybody else in Washington. It's rare for anyone to be
but
held
they've
accountable.
They've been doing it for 30 years. For how long?
Well, I understand. And it's something that's got to be stopped. I mean, someone's got to be held accountable. And it's not a question of just someone. Everyone's got to be held accountable who is accountable. And they need to be made to understand that there is a price to pay for betraying this country and behaving in a way that's criminal, unethical, contrary to the best interests of the United States of America. Insofar as they embrace that kind of conduct, they're going to pay a price. And that price has to be enforced by we the people, and we have failed to do so. We let them get away. You understand? We let them get away with extraordinary crimes. You know, there was a situation, Congressman Dannemeyer out of California during the Clinton administration. He calculated that there were 26 individuals that had been closely associated with Bill Clinton that had died under mysterious circumstances. I don't know 26 people that I've known my entire lifetime that have died as of, you know, and I'm a senior citizen. Bill had 26 who died under unusual circumstances. And the implication, Dannemeyer said this was horrifying and frightening, and the implication, whether it was true or false, remains to be seen. The evidence was never really investigated. And in fact, subsequent lists wound up with something I believe was the list was increased to something like 42 before it was done. 42 individuals closely associated with Bill Clinton dead. The implication was that Mr. Clinton had been somehow associated with these fatalities. And you can bet, if that were true, you can bet that Hillary is not completely unaware. Well, I'm aware that we have to stop and take more commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom, and we'll be back on the Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
I think we ought to talk about, because we're going to talk about the TPP agreement, treaty. And but this is from the Wall Street Journal, how immigrants to the U.S. from China top those from Mexico.
Now,
I'm not sure if these, I know where you're going.
No,
I'm
you
not
don't.
Sure. So while the data include undocumented immigrants, it may undercount them. So I doubt if they've actually truly have topped those from Mexico. But as far as record keeping and the paper trails, supposedly they have.
Well, it depends on whether we're talking about immigrants that are legally admitted or we're talking about immigrants that are illegally.
That's what I just said.
All right. I'm just trying to make sure I understand what you're talking about. It may be that the number of legal immigrants from China exceeds the number of legal immigrants from Mexico, but the number of legal immigrants from China might not exceed the number of illegal immigrants from Mexico. But is that what they mean or is that not what they mean?
What it means is China was the country of origin for 147,000 recent U.S. immigrants in 2013, while Mexico sent just 125,000. This is according to the Census Bureau, so these are legal. With India, 129 immigrants also topped Mexico, though the two countries' results were statistically different from each other. For the study presented last week at the Population Association of America Conference in San Diego, researchers analyzed annual immigration data for 2000 to 2013 from the American Community Survey. The mandatory annual survey conducted by the Census Bureau asked where respondents lived the year before. Researchers counted as an immigrant any foreign-born person in the U.S. who said they previously lived abroad without asking about legal status.
Okay, so it could include illegal.
So while the data include undocumented immigrants, it may undercount them.
Well, I think the question is, it probably does. It probably does because they're not going to admit very few people. If they've come in here illegally, they're not going to say, oh, yeah, I was living in Mexico last year. I was living in Hong Kong last year. I was living in Peking last year, but now I'm here. They wouldn't trust the system. I wouldn't expect them to
I'm
trust the system.
I'm assuming the illegal, I'm sure there's still many more that this country will not address or admit to of undocumented illegal aliens. So I'm sure there's still more of those crossing the border from the Latin countries.
Well, but it's more convenient. You know, there's a convenience factor when it comes to entering a country illegally. It's a lot harder to cross an ocean, the Pacific Ocean, than it is to cross the Rio Grande.
The whole point truly is, though, it's not whether they're Chinese, Mexicans, or India, or space aliens. By 2014, according to census projections, and 2014 is not that far away.
What do you mean 2014 is last year.
2044. I'm sorry. 2044. The entire U.S. population will have no racial majority, and instead a melting pot of minorities will shape American society and politics. Hispanics are still the U.S. largest racial or ethnic minority group, but about two-thirds of them are now native-born.
Well, the world is changing. The country is changing. I'm not convinced it's for the better. But it's not simply a question of, you know, illegal aliens are corrupting this country or having an adverse impact. And they're going to take jobs. They're going to cut the wage scale. It can't be any other way. You have more people in this country looking for jobs who are willing to work for minimum wage or even less to have some sort of a job. That creates a downward pressure on employment wages for everybody. And it'll catch up. If it hasn't already, it's going to catch up with all of us. The American dream, which is that every generation would live better than the previous generation, that has been in effect throughout American history up until the 1970s. And then it started to slack off. And now, who believes that your children are going to live as well as you are? who is optimistic about the future. So, oh, yes, the American dream is still alive and well. No, it's not. No, it's not. And what's going to happen is your children are going to be living in something very close to poverty, or at some, I won't say poverty, but certainly a lower standard of living than their parents. Probably children will have a lower standard of living than their parents, certainly than their grandparents. Right? And where is this going to turn around? When do we become, you know, one of the most powerful and wealthiest nations on earth again? When do we get to that point again? Anybody know? Do you see that in our future? Because I don't. And the reason, we've lost, when I was a little boy, again back in the 1950s, 60s, we were the wealthiest country on earth. We were the world's number one lender. We're the world's number one creditor. Now we're the world's number one debtor. There's no way that change is not going to come back to hurt us badly. And on one level, I'll sit back and say, well, the American people deserve it, even though I'm part of them. Because we have been irresponsible, we've trusted politicians who don't deserve our trust, and they have betrayed us and betrayed us and betrayed us. But even if we are to some extent, and a substantial extent, responsible for what's happened in this country, we'll be even more responsible in the future if we don't understand who's really wrecking this country. And the answer is the leadership of the Republican Party and the leadership of the Democrat Party. Neither one of them is working in your best interest or the nation's best interest. All of them are working for what appears to be a North American Union and a New World Order. And it's important that we recognize who's really responsible and hold them accountable. You know, if we're willing to hold these people accountable, they might stop. We might get politicians that actually would do what they're supposed to do, which is work for the best interests of this country, instead of getting politicians that are working against us. We've got an article here from the Washington Times entitled "Selling Out the Constitution and Main Street on Trade." And it talks about the fast track process that's being proposed for the Trans-Pacific Partnership and trade treaties. All right? And these treaties have been negotiated in secret. Why? Because they know if the American people find out what's really going on, they will riot, they will act to stop it. So what they've done is they just let's negotiate in secret. We won't let the peons hear about it. And then we'll try to implement fast-track authority within the government of the United States to ratify these treaties. And this Washington Times article explains, first, President Obama wants fast-track authority to limit the power of Congress. According to Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution, Congress alone has the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations. Yet congressional Republicans want to cede that power to the president. We have a bill, we have a government that's built on the premise that we have separation of powers. And it means that if you're in the judicial department, you can't legislate and you can't enforce laws. You can't act, you can't exercise any of the powers of the executive branch. You can't exercise the powers of the legislative branch. If you're in the legislative branch, you can make laws, but you don't enforce laws, which is the business of the executive branch. And you don't interpret the laws, which is the business of the judicial branch. And the idea is that the three branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial, are supposed to operate in isolation from the other two. They're supposed to be separate and distinct. And what Congress is doing, and the Republicans in particular, say, let's give some of our congressional power to the president. Flat out violation of the doctrine of separation of powers. No proviso for Congress to make this kind of sacrifice in the Constitution as understood by the American people. This constitutes acts of treason. They want to limit the power of government or of Congress. We'll dump the power, give the power to President Obama, and if the people get angry later on, they can blame Obama. And the Congress can continue to behave irresponsibly and just walk around with their hands out and see how many political campaign contributions, that is to say bribes, they can collect from multinational corporations. The article continues. It says, although the president is granted broad negotiating powers for treaties, fast track guts the two-thirds requirement for Senate ratification. Under the Constitution, to ratify a treaty, it takes two-thirds of the Senate. But what they want to do is they say, we're going to change that, and we're going to only have half of the House of Representatives and half the Senate. If they vote for the treaty, then the treaty is good. All right? If it was two-thirds, they'd never get it passed. Half, they can do that. There's no proviso for half in the Constitution. This is clearly an unconstitutional process that they are attempting to implement here. And they will eliminate the two-thirds requirement for Senate ratification. Fast track will limit debate, eliminates amendments, and requires a mere simple majority in both houses of Congress for the passage of any trade agreement under the allotted procedure. Fast track binds the hands of future Congresses by ceding the power of trade agreements beyond the two-year term of its current members. In other words, a popular revolt. Imagine that we enact this new Trans-Pacific Trade Treaty because we're stupid and lazy, but we figure out after a couple of years, and they say, oh my gosh, I can't get a job, I can't pay the rent, I can't have a house, I can't get a car, in part because of this Trans-Pacific Trade Treaty. And people say, let's stop it, make it stop, end it. And they are attempting to bind future generations and say, nope, you can't go back and repeal this thing. Once we get this new treaty in, I won't say that repeal is absolutely impossible, but it is extraordinarily difficult. If they can fool you one time, you will not have an opportunity to get smart and say, wait a second, I changed my mind. And here's something else. Free trade records of destroying jobs is obvious since the U.S. signed NAFTA in 1994. The American trade deficit with the world has grown by almost 500% to $722 billion in 2014, and nearly 4 million U.S. manufacturing jobs have vanished in the post-NAFTA era. Again, Ross Perot, he warned us all in 1992. He said, if you pass NAFTA, there's going to be a giant sucking sound as the jobs are sucked out of this country and shipped over to foreign countries. And he was exactly right, except there was no giant sucking sound. The jobs left, but they left quietly, and nobody paid much attention. But that is what's probably one of the key reasons for a lack of economic recovery since the onset of the Great Recession. Huh? How are we going to have an economic recovery when we shipped our jobs and our industries overseas? That was a function of NAFTA's free trade agreement. Now we have a new and improved Trans-Pacific Partnership, which will be another free trade agreement. I guarantee you are all going to take it in the neck. Your children will take it in the neck. Your grandchildren will take it in the neck if you allow your Congress, your Senate, your president to enact the Trans-Pacific Partnership. All right, you need to get on the phone, get on the email. I don't care what you have to do. If you got to ride a horse, go to Washington, D.C., and make them understand this cannot be. And if your congressmen, your senators vote for this, then make it abundantly clear they'll never be reelected. And stick to it. Don't just threaten them. Make a mark. I don't care what they do. I don't care if they eliminate death. No more reelections. You're not coming back under any circumstances. So, I don't know. We are in difficult times. This is simply evidence. This Trans-Pacific Partnership is simply more evidence of a government that is clearly, undeniably working in ways that are obviously, undeniably unconstitutional, contrary to the best interests of the American people, and they're betting that you folks are going to sit on your butts and do nothing. And if you do, this country will just go further down the toilet. And when it happens, don't complain.
Obamacare was the one instance to test the people to see if they could get it through. And we've been told by people who worked on the Affordable Care Act that they absolutely presented the program in a way to which the stupid people of America would accept
intended.
It.
Anyway, it was intended to
you know, it's all marketing,
mislead.
Folks. They do all, you know, you guys are so, the people are so controlled and manipulated to accept everything that they give you. They test you and condition.
And then laugh at you.
And then laugh at you.
Scam fools voted against their own best interests again. From the government's point of view, most Americans don't have brains enough to be a crook. They'll just follow along if the government says, well, we need to do this. Well, you know, if the Congress says so, if the president says so, I guess we need to follow orders. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be right back.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to share with the listeners a comparison that I did with some online sellers of gold and silver. I was comparing my prices with just a couple. There's many more. And for the 1 ounce Gold Eagle coins, we were all pretty much the same price. I used Atmex, JM Bullion, and Kitco. Although Kitco does have some hefty shipping costs, they charge per thousand for that I could read on their internet.
You mean per thousand? They charge not just per coin per se or per weight.
Per thousand dollars. That is correct. That is correct. Now, I know I've seen some things where they have free shipping and everything, but I'm basing this on 1 ounce gold American Eagle coins. Pretty much we were all the same in the price on those. 1/10 ounce gold Eagles. This was based on Friday's price of gold at $1,175. Atmex was $135. JM Bullion was $140. Kitco was 134 and my price was $132. Silver Eagles, I just did the most popular items. They have thousands and thousands of products, and I'm sure there's some really good deals on some of those, but this is the main products that I believe are important in a portfolio. 1 ounce Silver Eagles, spot was 612. Prices range from 1981 to 2036. My price was 1931. So again, I was lower by 50 cents. Kitco was actually the same price, but again, they have higher shipping costs. 90% silver. That ranged per $1 face value from $13.40 to $13.29. Mine was $13 per $1 face value. The most significant was the 1921 Morgans. They ranged from $24 to $27. My price was $22.50. So, folks, when you're out there doing your cost comparisons, make sure you're doing apples to apples. Give us a call, and we'd be more than happy to do your comparison for you. 1-800-375-4188. We're using Friday's prices for this little special, since these were the numbers that I used for the comparisons. 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle at $132. We're going to use Friday's price for 1 ounce Silver Eagles, and this includes your shipping cost for $538. You can buy 1 or 100 of these specials, and if you'd like to bring this up to the 2015 number, the $2,015, you can have the same special for the Silver Eagles and the 1/10 ounce Gold Eagle, and we will just add a Mint State 64 $20 gold piece, and that would bring your total package to $2,015. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
We got an article here from Reuters. Bull market super cycle for stocks, bonds is ending. That's according to Bill Gross. Bill Gross is the principal behind Janus. What is the Janus Capital Group, which deals with, I believe, over $1 billion in assets, and he's the principal behind that. He says the bull market supercycle for stocks and bonds is approaching an end as the unconventional monetary policies that have bolstered asset prices since the financial crisis are running out. Okay? Now, what he's saying is that the Federal Reserve and principally, and to a lesser extent, the federal government, they pretty much exhausted their resources for controlling the economy and trying to stimulate the economy. He is at least implying that he doesn't expect a significant resurrection of quantitative easing in the form of quantitative easing 4. Now, there's other people who say it's going to definitely happen, but he's at least implying he doesn't expect to see more quantitative easing. He doesn't think that the near zero interest rates can be sustained indefinitely. He doesn't say that expressly, but that's the implication when he says the unconventional monetary prices that have bolstered asset prices, stock markets, since the onset of the Great Recession, the unconventional monetary prices are policies, excuse me, are running out. All right. And he is anticipating that without these unconventional monetary prices, they won't be able to sustain 18,000 on the Dow, for example. The attempt by global central banks to cure a debt crisis with more debt doesn't have much further to run. That's what we have in this article, which will end a rally that's lasted 3.5 decades. Credit-based oxygen is running out, Gross wrote in the Outlook, titled A Sense of an Ending, in which he compared the final stages of the market cycle to his own mortality. He says, I merely have a sense of an ending, a secular bull market ending with a whimper, not a bang. Well, you know, hard to say what's going on here entirely. Bill Gross is apparently he's when he tangles his own mortality up, a sense of his own mortality with a sense that the market is coming to an ending, it's hard to know for sure if his opinions are accurate or merely personal. Are they objectively reflecting what's happening out in the markets, or are they primarily an expression of he's become concerned that, you know, the end is near, he's 71 years old. That means he's a really he's a really old guy, Melody. He's 71. I,
really?
On the other hand, am a youthful 70. So I'm not concerned with my mortality at this point in time. Now, I don't have any concerns about my mortality, as a matter of fact. So it doesn't confuse, it doesn't color my judgment or my opinions. Maybe it does his. So what do you think? Are we coming to an end of the markets, bull market, ending with a whimper rather than a bang? Do you think, what do you think, Melody? Whimper or bang?
Well, I learned a long time ago you can never underestimate their power and their ability to keep things going and to control things. They certainly have seen and tested the stimulus program. So they do know how that type of a control that many, many, many of us could never, just never imagined that they would be able to pull it off. But they have done, you have to give them credit where credit is due. Does it make it right? No, it doesn't. But, I mean, they have been able to control it. I believe, and I've said for a very long time, we're going to wake up one day and the whole world will be changed. Now, whether that one change is due to some sort of catastrophic outside event, natural event, occurrence that does these things, I mean, we certainly see a lot more of, oh my gosh, earthquakes and all kinds of crazy things that are happening. Any one of these, you know, could change everything. So I still believe we're going to wake up one day and the whole world will change. People will try to scramble and get their finances in order in a short period of time, and that will only create, you know, more fear, or it just won't be done. I mean,
do you think we're going to wake up and the world will change one day, or has the world already changed and we'll wake up one day and we'll recognize that change? I mean, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think the world has changed, but
I
believe
dramatically.
I think the final nail in the coffin will come with a bang. And
I think it has to do with
perception. It's just not a realization of the problem and that the world has changed. I think there will be mass amount of funds lost to people. Their lives are going to change drastically. And
I'm just suggesting that the reason for the losses is already there. All right, but the public doesn't recognize it yet, and that public recognition will at least be one of the nails in the coffin.
Well, they're
and
not
maybe
affected
the last
by
nail
it
in the coffin. As long as people think and believe, I mean, the government understands this, and they're constantly trying to boost public confidence by lying to us. And what I'm saying is, at the moment when that confidence is finally lost, if there is such a moment, that's when the stuff definitely hits the fan. So long as the people think things are okay, paradoxically, they can kind of continue to muddle through. But if and when we get to a moment where people say, oh my gosh, I don't have any confidence in this system anymore, at that point, even though the reasons for losing confidence may have been generated years before. So I'm thinking, I'm speculating. It's the awareness and the resulting loss of confidence that will trigger the problem. Do you think that's, do you agree? Do you disagree?
I mean, if you have some sort of a natural catastrophic event in a major point and things begin to fall apart, it could be in an event. It could be just from the loss of confidence. But usually a trigger will have to, there's some sort of a trigger that makes people lose confidence. They're not smart enough to recognize it on their own. They have to see,
well, maybe not,
feel.
Maybe they're smart enough.
They have to see it and feel it. It's gonna, in order for confidence to be lost, they have to feel it. They have to be affected by it, and they have to know it.
I don't think it's just that way. I think they have to admit it to themselves. They say, oh my gosh.
Many of them.
A lot of what's going on in the world right now, a lot of people understand or have at least some vague understanding that we're on a bad track. We're headed in a bad direction. They get that. They understand it, but they haven't exactly admitted it, maybe to themselves, maybe in a public way where they say, oh my gosh, this thing is really, really bad. They haven't made that admission, and as long as they refuse to admit that, you got some splaining to do, Lucy. Maybe Lucy doesn't have any splaining to do. Or Barack Obama, or John Boehner, or Nancy Pelosi. They don't have to explain until the people finally admit we have a problem. And if that were true, then we have to ask ourselves, to what extent are we sustaining this system because we don't have the courage to face the problem? We're not going to fix the problem until we admit the problem. We're not going to fix the problem until we diagnose the problem. We're not going to diagnose it until you admit the problem. You got to face it. As long as we refuse to admit the problem or we are reluctant to admit it, we allow the problem to just fester and grow larger and larger. And it's kind of like a lump, on your body. And we are going through, maybe it'll go away. Maybe it'll just spontaneously go away. But maybe if you continue to allow the lump to grow, you're going to have a very big problem.
Well, here's an interesting thing that just came out. Hillary Clinton agrees to testify on Benghazi and emails this month. And we don't have time to go into details on it, but she'll probably write the script.
Well,
questions to ask and so forth. But
from a political perspective, if she can get that off her, get out from under those issues today rather than a year from now, it's better for her to kind of try to eliminate the problem. I don't know that she'll be able to, but I don't doubt that she will try. She'll try to get, just be done with it. We talked about that. We had a congressional hearing. They whitewashed the whole thing, and they said I wasn't responsible for any of those problems, and everything I did was legal, and it was okay. And that would be my guess.
We'll watch and see what happens.
It's going to be interesting to see how her testimony is received, because that reception will at least imply whether or not members of Congress, even Republicans, are saying, give her a break. Let's not talk about this anymore.
Well, let me put this in there. She's only going to testify only for one session. And her attorney, her lawyer, David Kendall, said Clinton would answer all lawmakers' questions during one session, and it would not be necessary for her to appear twice. Isn't that just great, being able to control?
How long is the session? Yeah. Is this a five-minute session, or how long does this session last? There's the question.
Another distraction also. This is just another distraction, because this is all we're going to hear about for the next month until she finally does it.
I'm going to get some Calliope music for this program. Boop, 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 boop. It is, when we talk about Washington, it's the greatest show on earth, with Barack Obama as the ringmaster and Hillary vying for the job. She wants to be ringmaster too. I'm Alfred Adask. I'm not trying to be the ringmaster. I'm just co-host with Melody Cederstrom here on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.